Welcome to The Catholic Arsonist.
I always read the gospel first, and the first thing that came to mind when reading the gospel, stay awake,
be ready.
You do not know the hour
when the Lord is coming. Stay awake.
Yep.
Anyways.
I thought the same thing.
Okay, sorry. We can
glad
go.
You were there with me.
Mm-hmm. Is that you wanna? Should we all do that together? Or you're gonna solo?
No.
We're all gonna sing together.
Sing to me, Paula.
This will be the best episode yet.
Stay awake. This is the first episode we've had to do virtually, I think.
Yeah.
With all three of us.
I was not gonna also, do it by myself.
Probably this is like a year's anniversary of us recording podcasts, even though they were released in like January. I think this would be a year's anniversary.
Woo-hoo!
The first week of-
Here we are. Are you kidding me?
Welcome everyone to The Catholic Arsonist, starring Shayna, Supermom, Guntley, Alyssa, MIA youth minister.
Shut up. Don't air my wounds out for everyone.
Oh.
And yeah. Absent father, Andrew.
Here we are.
Wow.
Band's back together.
Beautiful. That's great.
If you can't judge by the, we're not back together though, by the quality of our voices, if you can judge. We're all away. We're all separated, but all brought separate. Together by the power of technology.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm currently looking at Shayna Guntley's wedding photos hanging on the back of her bedroom wall.
Oh man, come on.
St. Paul tells us we should share life with one another. Yeah. This is next level.
This is very intimate. Very intimate. Hey, when you got to try to find a quiet space to podcast in your own house, this is it.
It really is just a matter of time until one of your daughters barges in.
Yep.
Who do we think it'll be? Lorelai.
Yep.
She's just gonna come and ask a very simple question too. That's it. That's it. Mom, can I? And you'll be like, wait 20 minutes. This is how it goes.
Come on. Yep, so we better move fast.
Great.
Let's jump on in.
Go for it. First week of Advent.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just wild to think that we're here.
So now that we've started to read like the readings for every Sunday and kind of break them down, can someone explain to me how the like gospels and the readings for Advent are chosen? Because like the gospel, Jesus is in there. And I'm like, oh, wait, we're supposed to be preparing
but
for him.
He ain't even come yet.
Exactly.
He ain't even stepped foot on the scene. Why are we hearing about Jesus?
Yeah, so if you could just break that down for me, that'd
just
be great. Just break it down,
Shayna.
Absent father.
No. That was like, you just gave me a softball and I'm going to hit it out of the park.
All right.
I'm glad you asked. This is very exciting as we roll over into a new liturgical year. We are now in what we call, for the readings, year B. Okay. Formerly, last year, we were in year A, which stands for awesome. Year B stands for...
Beautiful.
Mark.
Better than ever.
Mark. That doesn't make sense.
B stands for Mark. So the A.
Are you following, folks?
The A stood for Matthew. And B stands for Mark.
What kind of crazy new English is this?
It's Greek. We want to understand.
C stands for Luke. Okay. So we're in year B now, which means for the rest of the year, we're going to be hearing from Mark's gospel. Exceptions being probably Christmas, Lent, and Easter, maybe, which we'll hear from John's gospel. Okay. So this season, this year, we'll be hearing from Mark's gospel, which includes Advent as well. Your question is super poignant. Here we are gearing up for Christmas. Shouldn't we be hearing about time before Jesus was born? Well, in Mark's gospel, I don't have my Bible right here. Where is? Oh, it's in the chapel. But we don't even get a time in Mark's gospel where Jesus wasn't, because it begins with the voice crying out in the wilderness. It begins with John the Baptist starting his public ministry, Mark's gospel. But the important thing about Advent is that it's not, Advent is the word that means coming, coming into life, coming into existence. And that's where we get the word adventure from. The Lord's taking us on an adventure. And it's focused especially not just on the first coming of Christ, but on the second coming of Christ. So that's one of the ways that like Advent is preparing us, is not just for Jesus coming as a baby, which already happened, not an event in the past, but for an event in the future when he comes back again in glory. Does that help?
Yes, thank
you. Your question. Which I think is super poignant, and what leads sort of into the gospel is that the church totally wants us to prepare our hearts should Jesus come back here and now. Like, it's fine to think about Jesus coming again as a baby, but like the more immediate preparation you and I need to make, the more immediate preparation you and I need to make is for when Jesus comes again, which could be any day, any hour, right? Mm-hmm.
We got to stay awake.
I feel like all the readings that we just heard at the end of the year A, at the end of this liturgical year, were all leading up to the second coming, though. Like, be prepared, you know? So there doesn't seem to be quite a different transition, except for the fact that it's now at the beginning of Jesus's life rather than at his teaching ministry. Maybe.
Can I stop you really quickly and go see who's at my door?
Sure. I was wondering why you smiled. I'm like, yeah. Who's with him?
We're like, is he okay? Is he okay? I think we're going to be able to hear him.
Look at this china cabinet in the back.
That's fancy.
It's fancy.
I'm sorry. Are you guys going to work on this stuff? Yeah. Okay. You know what it is? Thank you. Thanks.
They're going to shut his Wi-Fi off?
No. Are they going to turn your Wi-Fi off?
Well, if they do, I'm on my
phone.
Whatchamacallit? Data. Yeah.
Data.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
We better make it quick just for your data.
Is it unlimited? Is your data unlimited, Father? Tell us.
Yeah,
this.
I think so.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it is.
Good, then we're free.
Yeah.
So anyway, I get what you're saying, Alyssa, and maybe it's just I had the same thought, and I'm not sure like what the answer is necessarily. But Advent is this peculiar time where it is a gearing up for like Jesus coming in the flesh in the incarnation, but similarly like the second coming as well. And I don't know. Maybe that's just a more secular interpretation, especially with like, it seems like Christmas around the corner, but it, even in his second coming seems a little bit more incarnational during Advent than it does at the end of ordinary time when it just sort of be prepared. I don't know. That's just my sense, but.
I'm struggling with it because traditionally like Advent is, and obviously secular Christmas comes into play a lot with how we feel about, you know, baby Jesus and nativity scenes and everything. But Advent is typically like something new can be born within you by this coming. And it doesn't really focus on, at least in my interpretation of it, and maybe I could be very wrong, but it doesn't really focus on like the last things that we've just kind of gone through. And I'm tired of talking about the last things, but like death and judgment and everything. But because we live in a time where people are literally asking every day, is this the second coming? Like, is this the end of the world?
Yeah.
So I kind of want self.
And maybe that's where your.
But go ahead.
And I think that actually is a helpful thing to point to, is like the transition is from death, judgment, heaven and hell. And now it's like all geared towards hope. Like
new life.
I think And new life. And that's where I think maybe the difference is, where death, judgment, those could instill fear in us, whether like literal or reverential. I think hope springs eternal, and eternity comes to men in the person of Jesus. And I think the new lens is through hope.
Okay, so put your hope glasses on before we talk about these readings.
Hopeless. I've seen the hope diamond.
I have. Oh, yeah.
The Hope Diamond in London. It's not that impressive, I gotta be
in
honest.
In London?
It's a big diamond.
Wait, it's that in was London. In Washington, D.C.
Oh, it's in D.C. Yeah, it is in D.C.
Don't give to the British what is not due, okay?
There's like another, maybe there's a sapphire or something in the British Museum.
You're thinking of the heart of the ocean. You're thinking of the end of Titanic.
Is it a sapphire?
Yes, no. That's not a real thing.
No, there's definitely something in the British
Rose
Museum.
Threw that into the ocean. This is too much.
Never let go, Jack. Never let go.
What the heck? Okay. So these readings, new liturgical year, breath of life. So genius.
On the flip side of hope, is the reality that we don't get a Gloria in Advent, much like Lent, you know? But we don't get the Gloria because the bridegroom's not with us, not yet at least. But then at Christmas, we're going to get a Gloria, okay?
Amen.
We're going to get the Gloria. Read us the gospel, Alyssa.
Okay.
In your own handwriting.
I was telling them before this that my Bible has gone missing, and when things go missing while you're quarantined to a room, you don't have much access to seek it out. So I transcribed it, so pardon me if some of these words are incorrect, but this is Mark 13, 33 through 37. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. It's short, so I'm just going to read it. So this is the Gospel of Mark. Jesus said to his disciples, "Be watchful, be alert. You do not know when the time will come. It is like a man traveling abroad. He leaves home and places his servants in charge, each with his own work, and orders the gatekeeper to be on watch. Watch, therefore. You do not know when the Lord of the house is coming, whether in the evening or at midnight or at cockcrow or in the morning. May he not come suddenly and find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to all. Watch.
I have a few thoughts.
Father, you kick us off. What are you thinking?
It is like a man traveling abroad. That's what the kingdom of God is. Well, he's saying you do not know the time, when the time will come. And he's clearly referring to like the end time, okay? So, a few thoughts. One, you know, like Y2K, when everybody thought the world was going to end, or, you know, like the coronavirus, and when everybody thought the world was going to end. Anytime somebody proposes like a day or a time that the world is going to end, you know they're full of it, because Jesus is like God himself, and he says, you will know neither the day nor the time, right? So as soon as people start proposing the end of the world is going to come on this day or that time, they're just talking out of their rear ends. You know, we have it on from the word of God, the word himself, that we will know neither the day nor the hour. And so the invitation is to be watchful, be alert. But it's like a man traveling abroad. You and I think of that. Like you go on to American Airlines website and you say, when I'm going to travel, I'm going to go leave on this day and then I'm going to come back that day. Right. But that is like such a modern, an extremely modern, like within the past 50 or 60 years sort of timetable, even maybe 100 years. Like in ancient times, when somebody travels abroad, you have no idea when they're coming back. If you're going to be traveling on foot, if it's raining for 3 days or something like that, you can't travel. Your cargo would be completely weighed down. You'd be stuck in whatever, the mud. Or if you're traveling by ship, if it's too cold and there's ice in the water, you can't travel. So there's this sense that like the person's gone for a long journey and you have no idea when he might return. So I think, well, at least like historically, we have to situate ourselves in that reality. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My next thought is he leaves home and places his servants in charge, each with his own work, and orders the gatekeeper to be on watch. The servants already work for him. They know their master. There's already a relationship that's there. And all he's asked them is to, all them, he asked them to do is to keep to their own work and to just to be diligent in what he's asked of them, right? And this is a theme I've been thinking about, but like at the end of the day, this is a really, it's just a really potentially boring gospel reading. It's like, just do your ordinary work. I'm not asking you to go and change the world. Just do the ordinary, boring, like daily things that I've asked you to do. And when I come back, I just want to make sure that the kitchen floor is mopped and that like there isn't stuff strewn about everywhere. And I'm like, it is in some ways that simple. But I think for whatever reason, there's fear that rises in all of us. We're like, well, God's asking me to be like this gloriously triumphant person. It's like, no, he's just asking you to do like ordinary, like daily things. Mm-hmm. You with me?
I'm with you.
The only thing I keep thinking about is a look into like my family life. When Greg used to work, my family's going to love I'm sharing this, but when he used to work out of the home, we have trackers on each other because I would run a lot so he could see where I was when I was running. But it also gives me like a 5-minute warning when he's going to come home. So that's like my gatekeeper. So I'm like, okay, girls, daddy's coming home. Let's make sure everything's straightened up and ready. And
but imagine a world where you knew neither the day nor the hour.
Yeah, I can't.
We all get a 5-minute warning before the second coming. It's like, oh, shoot.
Is there a priest nearby? Is there a priest nearby?
As you guys were both talking, though, this image came to mind of this.
Hold on, can we pause right now?
Succinct, not difficult instructions as to how to proceed and how to live until he comes back. And as Father's saying, like, yeah, it's just daily duties, you know, like do the things that he asks. But when we speak about like hearing the Lord say to us, okay, you do not know the day or the hour when I'm coming back, but I promise to come back. At a certain point, and especially when he would have been saying this, like to his apostles, there would have been almost like a zeal about that. Like, okay, this is our mission and this is what we are to do. And he promises to come back. And so therefore we will live into that promise. But I feel like almost in the day to day, trying to live out our daily duties, like you were saying, it might become a little bit boring. And therefore we try to find little ways to, entertain or little ways to do our daily duties in the way that we desire them to be done or do what he asked of us, but in a way that just makes sense for the world that we're currently living in. And this has always been, throughout the time that he ascended to now, we as Christians have been trying to do our daily duties as Christians and to be watchful. But my fear is, and when I'm thinking about this gatekeeper, is that as we try to like assimilate to the cultures, we try to do our daily duties every day, we forget the promise that he's coming back. And therefore these things become null, and like the things that were once being asked of us as Christians, as those left in charge of his land, his property, whatever, his house, we seek for entertainment elsewhere. We seek to be fulfilled elsewhere and therefore lose sight of the promise that he is to come. And so, yeah, just as you guys were thinking, I was just imagining this gatekeeper not falling asleep, but like morphing his duties into a way that became entertaining for him rather than just staying alert and reminding himself of who it is that is coming back. And so I don't know, I get the sense, maybe this is like apt for where we are at, like in the culture, maybe it's apt for me personally, maybe both, I'm not sure, but I get the sense that when I am not watchful, when I'm the least watchful, it's because I forget the promise that he is coming. That's what sin is like, I forget the goodness of the Lord that he promises to fulfill every desire that I have to come and reclaim me, you know? And so I don't know, like this word watch, this command to watch, I think it is a call to like be diligent and everything, but I also saw it sort of as like, you have to remember. And in a world that forgets, like that's where we as Christians come in. We have to be the people that are constantly reminding one another, like, this is who you are. This is what you're supposed to be doing. This is the gospel. Like, this is what is coming. This is who is coming, you know? And so I don't want to forget, you know, and have that lead to a lack of foresight not watching. I don't know if that resonates, but that's just where my mind went.
One thing that sticks out a ton in that is just the sense of community, whether or not you meant it, but like even he's putting his workers or his servants in charge. And, you know, that's us, obviously. But like sort of what you're alluding to is that the Christian community, like, is tasked with the responsibility of reminding each other that the master's coming back. Mm. And any enterprise that's worth doing, it's probably worth doing with other people as well. If for no other reason, because we need them. We need others to keep us accountable and to like help us to grow. That's what families are for. That's why the Lord established families. Mm-hmm. But like the Christian life was never, ever meant to be lived alone, ever, you know?
Right.
But there's this tendency in like, you may have said it was like personal, and it absolutely is, because the faith is lived out personally. But it should never be lived in isolation. And so like there's this, I don't know, creative balance where it's like, okay, I need to live this out personally, but I absolutely need to let other people in as well, to be held accountable. Does that make sense?
Yeah. People start living things out in an isolated manner and stuff gets weird. People get weird in isolation.
What?
People get weird. Like you said, Alyssa, that we forget the promise, but like, have people ever even received the promise, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's what, like, when you're talking about a Christian community or a Christian culture, I'm not sure Christian culture hardly even exists. There's pockets of my people, pockets of my life that I'd say that they're part of the Christian culture. And then huge swaths of like people I know, while they actually are Christians, don't live it out at all. So have they even received the promise, or am I to be the one to tell them of it? You know,
I think we need to tell
them.
We
come in. Yeah,
exactly.
That's the heart of the evangelist is,
that's our work, as it says. Yeah. You left us with our own work.
Yeah.
Good point. I see what you did there.
Well, I'm not trying to like make a transition necessarily, but I think, if there's people in the house who over generations, you know, however this analogy parable is played out, like maybe over generations, they've forgotten the promise. Mm-hmm. So there has to be somebody, the gatekeeper, whomever, who comes along and says, hey now, chop, chop, here we go.
<T-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-
kingdom that we're building here in this house, but for something greater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that brings us back to like all the materialistic stuff we have during Advent. Like we tend to grow like just physically tired because we're present buying, we're planning, we're trying to figure out what the future looks like. What does Christmas look like this year? And we're just like run ourselves down and we're not even focusing on like Jesus anymore. We're focused on everything outside of it. Yeah. So my like note was like, I can't fall asleep spiritually during this time. Mm. Kind of like what the gospel said. I got to stay awake, make sure, you know, keep mm-hmm. him at the forefront.
Well, and that's the thing too. Like this line about like each being given work, staying awake for some work. That's what it says. He leaves home and places his servants in charge, each with his own work. And you alluded to this a little bit, Father, like I just need to do what is asked of me. But I think honestly, like, we who claim to know Jesus so often toil and expend ourselves doing things that are not asked of us. And we wonder why we grow tired in the spiritual life, or we wonder why, like, we get downtrodden in a sense, is because he gives us each specific work, each to our own ability, as we've talked about. Like, this, not everything, not the saving of the church, not the saving of the world is placed on my shoulders, but he does ask certain things of me. So part of being watchful isn't just like putting our head down and just working and looking around at what needs to be done, assuming that it's my role, but it's actually being attentive to what did he leave me in charge of? Like, what is mine to do? What are you asking of me in this time, Lord? But that requires an attentiveness to his voice, an attentiveness to the way that he speaks to me, which in and of itself is work, you know?
Definitely. And not that people will even pick up on this on Sunday, but maybe they will now. the collect, the opening prayer for the Mass, has this awesome line about that we would have resolve to run forth to meet Christ at his coming. Mm-hmm. And just like having that resolve each and every day. Like, I think we think of that, and we've talked about this sort of thing in the past too. Like, there is no finish line in the Christian life. Like, freedom is not a finish line. Freedom is something that you and I get up and choose every day. Like, same mm-hmm. thing about having resolve to run forth to meet Christ. I have to have the resolve to do that each and every day. And as you say, Alyssa, it's actually a lot simpler than we make it. Like, we tend to complicate things. And we need to ask the Lord to purify and simplify our hearts. As you allude to, Shana, too, like the Christmas season, like the secular world tries to get in and complicate things and say, Christmas, more Christ, is all about like this thing and that thing and this thing. And it's like, no, it's about him. And like, he's the reason for the season, you know? So like, let's have resolve to run forth to meet him. And if I'm going to run a race, I'm way better off with less on my stomach than, you know, to travel a little bit lighter. Hmm. So maybe that's an invitation too during Advent. It is typically a more penitential season anyway. I don't know, to simplify.
Do you guys remember the Red Cup scandal from Starbucks a few years ago?
No.
Starbucks?
I was abroad.
Oh, okay. Well, it probably would have been there too, but all Starbucks. All these, oh, wow. Truly penitential. All these people were up in arms because the year before, Starbucks had Merry Christmas written all over their cups, and then they released their Christmas line of what their cups would look like, and it was just red. Like, it did not say Christmas, and all these people were moaning and complaining that it didn't say Christmas. And I'm like, do what is yours to do. This is not what is ours to do. The world will not, you know. And so anyways, I'm sorry, that's super tangential, but yeah, we must know what is ours.
Totally. Shana?
I like Starbucks.
I like totals.
I don't really have anything else to add from there.
Psalm, I do want to get to Isaiah eventually, but one thing I want to point out about the Psalm, because everything comes back to Moses. I kid you not, everything. Lord, make us turn to you, let us see your face, and we shall be saved. I alluded to this in that talk I gave last week on Jesus, but like, to see the face of God is not, like, that's not part of our life. Here on earth, like, Moses asked to see the glory of God, and God told him in reply, no man can see the face of God and live, right? So when Jesus comes in and says, I behold the face of the Father, I know my Father and he knows me, like, I see him. And that has to be like, that concept for his disciples is like, what in the world is this guy talking about, that he is beholding the face of the Father? And so when they make this prayer. I guess it's David, you know, Lord, make us turn to you. Let us see your face and we shall be saved. It's a do or die sort of prayer. It's a zero sum game that we're playing with God. It's like, we want to see you. And that's going to save us. It's sort of like when the last plague, when God asks the Israelites to pour the blood of the lamb above the door. Why that is so significant of a plague and why it was so significant of a religious gesture on the part of the Israelites is because the Egyptians held lambs to be deity, to be gods. So if you killed one, that was going to be a capital punishment for you. So then the Israelites go and they kill all of these lambs and sprinkle the blood, taunting the Egyptians, sprinkle the blood, taunting them on their doorposts. And yet God delivers them. Mm-hmm. And they don't see corruption because of that offense. But now in this prayer, like, let us see your face, Lord. And in great hope, we know that we're going to be saved. I love it. I love it. It is so bold. But like, this should be the desire springing from every Christian heart. Lord, if you came today, I would not lament it at all. I want to see your face because I know that's my salvation.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know that. I feel like I'm like poo-pooing on all Christians, which is not my intent, but I don't know that the desire to see God's face is even like a question. But I don't know. It certainly is for me. It's one of those things that, and this is why Advent is so beautiful. And the first reading kind of touches on this, waiting with expectation. It's like, that implies that you're in touch with a desire that you have, that you know about, that you can articulate, but that you know is not being met anywhere else, which I think is a hard thing for people to address within me, is that I actually ache for something more and, it's not being met, you know? And so we would rather fill ourselves with other things than experience the ache of wanting to see someone's face who we cannot see while we're alive. It's a hard pill to swallow.
It is. Yeah, and even like it goes into it like, O Shepherd of Israel, from your throne upon the cherubim, shine forth, rouse your power and come to save us. This whole week's readings is about like the Lord coming down. Both in Isaiah, in the Psalm, and in St. Paul to the Corinthians, it's like begging the Lord to come near. And I think a lot of people are very comfortable saying, no, God, you stay where you are, and I'm going to stay where I am, and everything's going to be fine, like so long as you don't intrude on my life. But that's the whole thing about Christmas, is that God can't stand to stay in heaven. Like, he's so fervently wants to come down to earth, and yet humanity time and again finds reasons and ways to push him back up into heaven, right? But I hope that these prayers, if nothing else, like stir in us something of like inviting the Lord down to come and save us. Mm. Yeah, because even in Isaiah, which I love, like it's amazing. This is an amazing reading from Isaiah, because it begins, you, Lord, are our Father, our Redeemer. You are named forever. But like, Isaiah calls God Father, which happens like less than five times in the Old Testament. It wasn't super common to call God Father that way. And it's so beautiful because, you know, like the very first words of the prayer that Jesus gives us is our Father, right? So as they're hearing Jesus say those things, our Father, they're thinking about this reading. And so towards the end of it, he says, yet, O Lord, you are our Father, and we are the clay and you are the potter. We are the work of your hands. And in the between, he's like saying how sinful we've become, how we've strayed from you. And yet, Lord, we ask that you come near us. I don't know. I just think that like there's such a sense of like fatherly love that we shouldn't fear him, but that we should call upon him as if he's going to provide and care for us.
One word that's been coming up in prayer a lot for me has been the word admonish. I don't know if I've talked to you guys about this. Have I? No. And like juxtaposed with the word discipline. And so like a discipline is, and this is going somewhere, I promise, based on what you just said, Father.
I'm with you. I'm okay. Here for it.
insofar as like a discipline is something that is enacted beforehand, in order to kind of form our habits, form our ways of life. But an admonishment is something that is given after something is enacted. And the definition of the word admonish is actually like to remind you of your identity. So we think of like being disciplined of like school teacher with a ruler or whatever, like I've done something bad and therefore I need to be disciplined, but that's actually not as accurate of a term, discipline. Like the way that God as Father speaks to us is, yes, the Lord loves those he disciplines. Like what's the line? The Lord disciplines those he loves.
Lord chastises. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is discipline in a sense from the Father, but so much, at least that I've been experiencing, is an admonishment. Like after experiencing deep sinfulness or my own wretchedness, literally like ways that I act out. I don't encounter like the wrath of God in the sense that he hates me because I have wronged him. It's encountering someone who is angry that I have forgotten the fact that I'm like loved as a daughter. And so this reading from Isaiah, like speaking about God as Father. Yeah. It's so human. And as Father said, like Father Andrew says, he sandwiches it with these words, Father, you are Lord, are our Father, yet, O Lord, you are our Father. That's how it ends then. But in the middle, he says to him, you are angry and we are sinful. All of us have become like unclean people. All of our good deeds, like polluted ways. We have withered
rags.
Like
polluted rags.
Sorry. my chicken scratch, I can't read it. But yeah, just like saying like God, this is who you are. Like you are angry and we are sinful, but you are our Father. So like speak to me once more of like the fact that I'm your child, because my heart has been hardened and I've strayed from my ways. But this is what you promised me, you know?
Because in some ways the opposite is to, in some ways, still acknowledge that I'm connected to God, but to turn away and just act as if it's all cool, you know? Like I've obviously sinned, I'm kind of miserable, but I'm just going to keep on in my ways because it's just easier this way, rather than calling upon the Lord in fear, you know, mm-hmm. or in confidence. And that's what Isaiah is doing. Like I've so clearly sinned, but you're Father and you're not going to give up on us. Mm-hmm. We need more confidence that the Lord desires us to be with him.
And you even see that, sorry, Shayna, do you have things to add?
No, you guys are doing great.
in this line, this is the only line out of all this that I wrote down that I highlighted. No ear has ever heard, nor I ever seen, any God but you doing such things for those who wait for him. Would that you might meet us doing right, that we were mindful of you in your ways, in our ways. And so this idea that like, this is what you do for those who wait for you. I don't know if this will be super clear or will resonate, but just to wait, to be watchful is a level of vulnerability that I think we don't let ourselves get to. Because what it means, like I mentioned before, is that I desire something that I don't currently have, which we live in a world that like fill your desire as quickly as possible, satiate every desire as quickly as possible. So to actually want is a vulnerable position because it means you're lacking in something. But and that desire leads to almost a seeking. Like I'm watching and I'm waiting. And when you're seeking something, you're also expectant that it's going to show up. And anytime we're expectant, like that's the disposition God moves in. That's the disposition that he's able to speak into, to act in, because it is only when we're expectant that we have any sort of capacity to receive him. And so I don't know, admonishment, the word desire has been coming up so much for me, but it's just like, don't be afraid of these desires that we have. desire for him, desire for a better life, desire for to be a son or a daughter, like, I don't know, desire to be holy, desire to be fulfilled, all these things that arise that are so human that we try to push down or to fill. It's like, no, this is how it's going to cause us to seek and to expect, and in our expectation, that's when he will come, because we now have the capacity to receive him, even if it is the second coming and not a tiny little baby, which sounds better.
So much prettier.
Well, there is something even just about the word expectant, like a woman who's expecting. I was thinking about this because there's a really, I remember in Italy, there's a really funny story about a mix-up in that is a weird translation sort of thing, but like the Italians don't totally have a word for pregnant. They say, the woman is waiting. That's what they say.
Aren't we all?
Well, we should be. And like the idea of waiting, it understands that there's an end in mind, right? Yeah. And with a baby, it's pretty like set in stone when it's going to happen. And like in that preparation mode, like, the waiting, the expectation grows and grows and grows because you know there's something good here at the end. And like the way you use the words expectant, Alyssa, like I just think about the Lord and him coming, obviously as a child at Christmas, as a baby, but like his second coming. And do I have the hope that he brings something better? And like, I really have to check myself there because it's like, okay, well, I don't know if I'm ready for you to come. But like the whole virtue of Christian hope is that something better is in store. And I just don't think many people think there is anything better in store, either in this life or in whatever the Lord could possibly bring next. And if I don't have hope from that, like, what are we even doing here?
Yeah.
You know? It's just a lot of sadness.
That's why hope, gosh, is so, maybe that's not why it's a theological virtue, but maybe like that is why it's esteemed so highly, is because hope creates a space that a person can enter into. Like if I'm hoping for something, it is because, I don't know. I just like imagine this like land being kind of grazed, you know, like it creates a landing zone for someone to arrive. Whereas those that like when we get discouraged, that's why discouragement is so like, it's like extinguishing a fire, you know, it's like we start to lose hope and all of a sudden there is no, there's no point to life. There's no, everything becomes depressive and dark and dreary, mm-hmm. But yeah. I didn't even read the second reading.
It's not too exciting.
Nothing good. Not worth our time. Just St. Paul.
I think the one thing that St. Paul really brings out, though, is at least that sticks out to me, is that Jesus will keep us firm to the end. That we will be steadfast. We will be well-founded. We will be well-established. Held firm to the very end. And I think like there's something in each of us that strives for something that's lasting, something that's enduring, something that remains forever. That's why parents want to leave children behind. Like there's a legacy that endures beyond your life, you know? Or like I want to do great things in my life, things that people will remember me for later on. Even Macklemore, I can't remember what song.
Oh my gosh.
Even in the song Glorious, he says, this is a rapper, it's totally unnecessary. But he says, there's 2 days that you die, like the first time when you're buried in the ground, the second time is the last time anybody ever mentions your name. Ugh. And I actually think about that a lot. Like, when will the last time somebody ever mentions my name be? And like, it very well could be 10 years after I die. But part of me revolts against that. Like, how will my name never be mentioned again? And not just because like, well, part of it is hugely because I'm egotistical. But then the second part is like, how could I be erased? like me, who's like a precious, seemingly a precious gift from God, as what I would consider myself. Like, thanks be to God that he's established me and that he holds me firm to the end. And this is where our hope springs eternal, because our names are written in the book of life and they're never going to be blotted out, you know? Mm. And that's what it means to be held firm till the end, I think.
Inspirations from Macklemore.
Yeah.
Shana, which of your daughters came into the room?
It was no daughter. It was Greg.
Did Greg come in?
He was looking for my car keys. They're in my jacket pocket.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't even hear him.
I muted it when I heard him.
Oh.
Busted.
Well, lovely. We're embarking on a new season, mm-hmm. of Advent. And I pray it's going to be a great year, liturgically. And when 2021 rolls around, hopefully coming out of a year of craziness and like darkness, I think we do need hope. I think if there's any time to pray for that virtue, it's now. And not that the Lord would come in and like resolve all of our problems, but that he would come in and make us new and give us the sure certainty that he's with us, beside us. And I think like that's what happens at Christmas, that the Lord fights for us, and that we're not alone. And that's ultimately like a place that where we can find and draw forth hope each and every day, you know?
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Amen.
First Zoom, whatever episode out of the way.
Do you guys
have sparks? Oh, go ahead, Shane.
Yeah. Just going into Thanksgiving, thankful that everyone's staying healthy. Excited to eat some turkey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a spark that I'm kind of returning to. With some regularity, it has already happened, but I am really thankful to the Lord for it. On All Souls Day, now going back 3 weeks, I really wanted to go visit my grandparents' grave, and I had too busy of a day, so I couldn't. So then, like the week after All Souls Day, I had a burial at Resurrection Cemetery, and the person I buried was like four headstones down from where my grandparents are buried. And I was like, when we were walking up to it, I'm like, Lord, you can't be this good. Like, you can't. And it was in the same row, like out of a place that had like 200,000 people buried there. So after I did the burial, I went up and like prayed where my grandparents are buried. And yeah, I just, when you talk about the end times and things like that, it's like, I haven't forgotten my grandparents. And like, I just keep returning to that and how much hope it gives me to hopefully one day be reunited with them.
Beautiful.
It's good. Yeah.
It's awesome.
I didn't even think about a spark until now. I guess I just started Introduction to the Devout Life, St. Francis de Sales. Have either of you read that? Mm-hmm. Yes. No. Yes. No. Anyways.
Have you started talking about bees yet?
No.
You'll get there.
Okay. but it's... Yeah, it's written by a 15th century bishop. So it's a little bit like, it takes a little bit of acclimation to get my words to make sense in my head. But he associates charity with the devout life. And charity is kind of a mystery to me. So I'm excited to dive into it. But that's it.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Guess we'll see you guys later.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye. Bye.